In late 2017, then-director of the Indiana Department of Child Services, Mary Beth Bonaventura, resigned with a scathing letter to the governor. Since then, an independent evaluation presented a report with 57 recommendations on ways the department could improve. It's been 1 year since that report. So how is the department doing? Funding has increased, more staff hired, but has the so-called culture of fear begin to dissolve? We'll talk about it today on All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we welcome Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith, who's been covering this story. Later we'll hear from attorney and foster parent Kaya Misha Colum, who's worked to give foster parents a voice in court. We'll also have Christy Cundiff, founder of the Indiana Foster and Adoptive Parents Resources and Advocacy Group, herself a foster parent. What do you want to know about DCS's progress? Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. First, this news. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. The Indiana Department of Child Services has come a long way since the resignation of former director Mary Beth Bonaventura in December 2017. But the new director, Terry Stigdon, admits there's still more work to do. The agency continues to address the numerous recommendations made by an independent evaluation a year ago. What do you want to know about DCS's progress? We especially want to hear from you if you yourself are a foster parent or have otherwise been directly involved with DCS. How have things changed in the last 12 months? Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. Joining me in the studio to catch us up is Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Brandon, hi.
Thanks so much for having me on.
So just to get a little background, when the former director resigned, she did so because, among other reasons, the chief of staff at the time was cutting costs, controlling hiring, and what else?
Yeah, that's what she said. There have been a lot of conversations since that letter, her resignation letter, became public about whether there was more at work there. There's been some criticism lobbed at her specifically by folks in and around the Holcomb administration since then, too, because in part she – I mean, it didn't need to be inflamed by the media more than what she actually said in the letter, which was if things didn't change, that under Eric Holcomb's leadership and because of Eric Holcomb's leadership, children would die.
Well, it seems like the inflammation was intentional, though.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this was not an accident. She did not like the way that after Eric Holcomb became governor in 2017, after his election in 2016, that she felt clearly like he was encroaching on her leadership at the agency. But what Holcomb administration officials and their sort of avatars in the political world said afterwards was, we think there was mismanagement at DCS. We think money wasn't being allocated as effectively as it could be, and they put that blame in basically on Mary Beth Bonaventura. And to add to the sort of political fire that raged around her resignation, shortly thereafter, she went and worked for Curtis Hill at the Attorney General's office, a person with whom Eric Holcomb did not regularly see eye to eye, even before a scandal involving Curtis Hill later on.
Well, and this all kind of came about, of course, at a time when the number of cases at DCS was really spiking. I mean, this was the peak of the opioid crisis, or close to it at least. And that's pointed to sort of the reason for the problem at hand.
Yeah, if you want to think about the firestorm that was created around DCS, it was really set aflame by Mary Beth Bonaventura's resignation letter. But the kindling for that had been laid in place well before that. Again, as you point out, not only because of the opioid crisis, but principally because of the opioid crisis. You saw spikes in children in child welfare all across the country, but especially in places where the opioid crisis was particularly bad, and Indiana is one of those places.
Governor Holcomb accepted her resignation. He appointed a new director, Terry Stigdon, who's still at the helm today, and he orders an independent evaluation of the agency. They hire Child Welfare Policy and Practice Group to do it, but in January of last year, 2018, things got a little political. What did the Democrats want to do?
Right. Well, I mean, so it's the political versus the policy. On the one hand, Democrats thought this is, you know, you have the former head of this agency saying children are going to die if you don't change. And they felt like we can't wait for some outside group who was hired by the governor to tell us what's wrong with the agency. They thought as the legislature they should exert some sort of oversight authority, do their own investigations, and try and figure out what needed to be done to fix the agency. Now, Republican leaders – again, there's some policy behind that argument. There's also the politics behind that argument. They are the minority party. Eric Holcomb and Republicans control basically everything at the State House. So Republican leaders at the State House said investigations like that are not what this Indiana legislature is set up to do. They're a part-time legislature. They only met in 2017 for 4 months, a little less than 4 months technically. They were not in a position to do anything like that. They thought it was best to let experts from outside prepare this report over several months and then come back in the 2018 session and implement any necessary legislative recommendations that were part of it.
Republicans said, hold on, let them do their thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So fast forward, the report was then delivered June 18th, 2018, and it offered 57 specific recommendations, which seems like a lot, but how did the governor react to that?
He was very excited when we talked to him the day of the release of the report because, as he put it, we have a roadmap, you know, a blueprint, as he called it. It was, we know what all the problems are, but now we don't just have sort of a grand, well, we need to fix things. It's, here are the specific things you need to hear, the problems, and here are the ways to perhaps solve them. So I think from a sort of functional standpoint, he seemed very excited because it was like, okay, here's things we can benchmarks we can hit to make things better.
All of these things can't be changed right away, but some of them could. What did they do right away, immediately?
Right. Well, first things first, they announced on the same day that the report came out, because they, of course, had been getting updates throughout the process on what the report, on what the findings were, as the CWG, the outside group, was sort of looking at the agency and talking to a bunch of people. The governor's office knew along that way, over the 6 months or so that they were doing this, okay, here are the things they're finding so far. And one of them was that we just aren't paying our staff enough and that there's not nearly enough staff. So what they did in the immediate was pour $20, $25 million into the agency to raise everybody's salaries. Now, the actual salary increases didn't take place that day. It took a little while to get that sort of administratively doled out. But it was an immediate sign to not only knock off one of those recommendations, but also, I think, from their perspective, send a message to DCS employees like, hey, we acknowledge that this is an issue and we are going to solve it right away. Because the other problem, another major problem, was not only are you not paying them enough, we're not keeping enough around. So it wasn't just that we don't have enough caseworkers. Part of the reason we don't have enough caseworkers is because we're losing them at way too high a rate. Now, in child welfare, anywhere you go, there is more staff turnover than you see at an average workplace because of the nature of the work. It's really hard and emotionally, physically, psychologically draining, even in the best circumstances a lot of times. So you're always going to have staff turnover like that. But it was way too high. And so the immediately pouring money into the system to help solve the salary problem, at least, or at least try to solve the salary problem, was in part a message to say, don't go anywhere. We are working on this. We're trying to fix this.
And indeed, more money was asked for. In December of last year, Director Stigdon asks for more. They got more than $600 million in 2017 at the beginning of that budget. But the opioid crisis meant that the number of children in the system went way up. How much did DCFs end up getting in addition to that?
Right. So it's important to talk about this in two ways. When you talk about the state budget of Indiana, there is every 2 years they write a new state budget, and this is how much money they give to all of the agencies in the state. DCS, as you said, got something like $600 million in 2017. But then you see this explosion of cases. Then you get the firestorm with the resignation letter, and you get a lot more eyeballs on the problem saying, how do we fix this? And one of the ways it did that was the Holcomb administration moved money around because it's empowered to do so. So it moved money from different funds that had already been appropriated in that state budget, and they sent them to the agency about like close to $300 million worth. And that covered things like hiring a bunch more attorneys, hiring a bunch more case managers, training, all of the things. Well, not all of the things, but a lot of the things that the report talked about. Then it comes time for a new state budget in 2019, earlier this year. And so late 2018, like every other state agency, DCS goes to the lawmakers and said, this is how much we want because this is how much we think we need. And what that was the amount that they basically were already working with. So the $600 million they'd gotten in the last budget and add $300 million on top of it, roughly. We're talking about big numbers, so I'm rounding a little bit. And that was met by lawmakers with a, okay, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And over the course of a four-month session when they're writing this new state budget, they talked bit by bit by bit about how to basically get that number down, because it ate up a bunch of what they thought was going to be the new money they had in the budget. So I think lawmakers just kind of kept taking the point of view of, can we reduce that at all? Is it really need to be what it was? I think it was about $280 million. Does it really need to be all of that, or can we come down a little bit? And in the end, they actually did.
Heidi on Facebook says accountability is the biggest issue. No amount of money can fix the fact that we have new laws, but DCS not only doesn't follow their own policies, but they don't even follow federal policy either. Are you hearing similar concerns?
Absolutely. That is something that is repeated to me. That was repeated all through the legislative process. When you hear from parents and foster parents and stakeholders, I heard it in the interviews I did for the piece I did earlier this week. And it is something, admittedly, that idea of consistency, that, yes, we have these new laws. We have federal policies that we have to follow. We have internal policies that we have to follow. But in talking to Terry Stigdon, she said that she acknowledges that consistency is a major problem that still needs to be tackled.
We're talking about a statewide agency here. Not only making sure that the practice of the family case managers with our families is consistent, but also our practice and how we work with each other.
And there's a lot of different reasons that consistency is a problem. One of it is physically the size of the – there are agents in all of our 92 counties, and making sure every one of them does everything exactly the same is hard. But a big part of that is training, and that's something that's still ongoing. But if you talk to attorneys who work child welfare cases, you'll hear that if you go from one county to the other, case managers, attorneys from DCS, even judges are handling things very differently. If you go within a county from one judge to another, from one attorney to another, they will apply the law differently. They will be, in some cases, and I've heard this a lot, we heard this a lot over the last couple of years, DCS attorneys aren't even aware of some of the laws they are supposed to be following, whether federal or state. And that's a real problem of training. And that was something that was a part of this report. It was one of the major recommendations, and that is ongoing work, although it was complicated by the fact that when you talked about the immediate things that they did, one of the immediate things that they did was they hired somebody new and created a brand new position in the agency, associate director, and they got Boone County Prosecutor Todd Meyer to leave that job and come work for DCS, and a primary charge of his was overseeing this report and the recommendations, but particularly as it rolled out, he looked at the attorney side, the legal side of DCS, hiring way more attorneys, getting the attorneys that they already had and those new attorneys trained so that that consistency across the system was there. And then he just resigned last week. No explanation. We don't know why he resigned, but he's gone. So it lends credence to what I hear a lot, which is accountability. Like, are they really going to follow through on all of this?
Lots to unpack there. Thank you for simplifying it for us, Brandon. And we'll stay with you through the next segment. State House reporter Brandon Smith in the studio talking about the progress at the Indiana Department of Child Services. Up next, we'll talk with foster parent advocates and get their take on how well the department's done and what they could still do. Of course, as always, your questions and comments. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. I'm Matt Pelser. This is All In. Back in 2 minutes. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. We're talking about a year of evaluation and reform within the Indiana Department of Child Services. And right now we're joined by Christy Cundiff, Administrator and CEO of Indiana Foster and Adoptive Parents Resources and Advocacy Group. Good afternoon, Christy.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
We're also joined by attorney and foster parent advocate Joe Delamater.
Hi. How you doing?
And attorney and foster parent advocate Kaya Misha Colum. Thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having us.
And of course, we'll take your questions and comments on social media. Is the Indiana Department of Child Services on the right track? Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. Christy Cundiff, it seems like the need to support foster and adoptive parents has existed for quite some time in Indiana, and your organization advocates for Indiana's foster and adoptive families. What prompted you to start this work?
I was a foster parent from 2006 to 2010, and my husband and I adopted 8 special needs children, and one of our daughters became seriously mentally ill. We could not get her any help here in the state of Indiana. Every treatment facility turned her down for treatment, saying that she was too sick. So we had to fly her to Colorado to the top treatment facility in the country for children with serious mental illness. And after her being there, I just knew after I left and had to leave my daughter there that we had a big problem in the state of Indiana, that foster parents and foster children needed a voice.
And for years now, you've been working to mitigate some of the more frustrating challenges that parents and children face in the DCS system, challenges that are so bad that before her resignation in 2017, former DCS Director Mary Beth Bonaventura called them potentially life-threatening to children in the system, and she called on the governor to act. Given your history and experience with working with foster and adoptive parents, being one yourself, do you agree with her assessment at the time?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We saw children dying at an alarming rate. We saw the lack of support coming in from, I believe, at the time, the General Assembly. That since has changed. Just the lack of awareness of the crisis. I mean, we say we have an opioid crisis in the state of Indiana. We have a child welfare crisis in the state of Indiana that's way bigger than the opioid crisis.
What have been some of the reactions from the community of foster parents as these efforts that DCS has rolled out have come out?
Well, we're not seeing any different. I mean, we're still seeing the same problems. I think, the DCS is so focused on the CWG report, which the Indiana Foster and Adoptive Parents provided. We were requested to provide information for that specific report on foster parent retention and recruitment, and we were interviewed for a couple hours by the CWG. But I think that it's become so focused based on DCS that the CWG report, that everything be followed, that they're just crumbling down all around that report. And we still have children dying. We still have children left in unsafe environments. We still have children that are being picked up and moved around like their furniture. We still have policies that aren't being followed. And my big problem that I have with DCS is there's no accountability. I heard Brandon's interview and him talking about the problems, but when we try to bring the problems to the department, there's no accountability whatsoever. And so we had the Foster Parent Bill of Rights that we fought for 2 years ago, but honestly, they're not as good as the paper that they're printed on if they're not going to be followed.
I want to add something too. There's been something in state law for a long time called the caseworker's caseload standards. It's roughly an average of how many cases a case manager should have at any one time versus active or in the home. And there was an actual lawsuit a few years ago in the state about the fact that DCS was largely just not meeting those standards in almost any of its districts. And it went all the way up to the state Supreme Court, and the state Supreme Court said, we agree, they're not being followed, but there's nothing we can do about it. They chose that they said that there's nothing the judiciary system can do to force DCS to do anything. And so when you talk about a lack of accountability, I think that's what a lot of lawmakers, particularly Democrats, again, there's politics involved here too, but a lot of lawmakers talk about the fact that who is holding DCS accountable?
Well, and I think too, and that's I think what has given the Indiana Foster and Adoptive Parents teeth is that we have started to involve. I mean, Senator John Ford from my home area was actually in foster care and adopted out of foster care. And so this has been a complete passion to him. I know Senator Erin Houchin has been absolutely amazing. She used to be a former FCM with DCS. And so we actually started including when I fire off emails, I get tons of emails every day of what DCS is doing and what they're not following. And so when I fire off those emails, I fire them off to the governor's office and I CC the representatives and I CC the senators in those reports. And I think that is what has brought a lot of the stirring up in the General Assembly saying, hey, you know, is this really going on? We have almost 10,000 members in our group now, and I believe about 150 members of that group is the General Assembly, the senators and the representatives, who want to know why this is happening. And I know many of them have not been getting responses back from DCS or phone calls back. And I know many of them have just left the Capitol and walked right over to the governor's or to the government center, to the DCS office, and said, I want to know what's happening, what's going on with this. I'm sorry, Joey.
Joe. Oh, thanks. I just wanted to touch on Brandon's comment because when the Supreme Court weighed in, it was not that they were saying necessarily like we don't want to do anything, but that we can't. And specifically, that's because the whole concept of judicial mandate, the judiciary telling an executive branch you must do this, is based upon enforcing what's in the legislation. And there was nothing in the legislation. There was no how. There was just a what. Meet this guideline. And you know, you'd figure we would learn from our mistakes. And when we were trying to implement changes over the last legislative session, and a lot of those changes just went live on July 1st, and we're happy to see those things start to roll out. But we tried to implement a how. We tried to tell our representatives and our senators, look, if you are going to try to hold DCS accountable, you need to give them instructions. Because left to their own devices, no government entity is gonna do it, quote unquote, the right way. They're gonna do it however they think is right, and will save them the most money because they have a fiscal responsibility. And so, you know, the Supremes had to punt it for that reason, and we're left in the position where nothing has changed. Because, as Christy mentioned, I'm experiencing this every day with my clients. DCS is not doing what the law says. And there's not much we can do about it. I started filing for contempt against DCS, and judges are bypassing that. And so far, we'll see what happens if we have to take that up to the appellate level.
Let's talk about some of your advocacy in the Foster Parent Bill of Rights. Kayamisha Kolam, you are a foster parent as well, or have been, and have been directly affected by the past policies of DCS, or perhaps lack thereof. A significant tool to address these shortcomings in a meaningful way has been through legislation, which we've talked about. And you and your husband, Joe, who's here, is also an attorney, both supported Senate Bill 1, which requires judges to give foster parents a voice in court.
Absolutely.
But before this bill was enacted, you were one of the many foster parents that found yourself in a powerless position. Can you tell us about your experience?
Sure. So my husband and I became foster parents a little over a year ago, probably about almost a year and a half ago. And when we got a call, it was for a little boy that was at that point just a day old. And they said, we've got a pre-adoptive placement. Will you take him? And without hesitating, we said, absolutely. Not being aware of how this whole process worked really prior to. So sight unseen, we said, yes, we'll adopt this little boy. And we went with our biological children to the hospital to pick up who we thought would be our forever son. And that's not the way it worked out. A month later, so after living under an impression that he would be our son for a month, DCS then stated, no, that's not the way this is going to work. We're doing reunification. Fast forward several months from that point, and he was reunited with his birth mom at a rehab center. She didn't have a job. She had been sober for less than 60 days. She had no place to live once exiting the rehab center, and this is what the judge and all those involved in his case ruled was in his best interest. I thought through that process, obviously we were hurt, but okay, if reunification is the way this is going to go, let's make sure that he's reunifying with someone that's put in the best place to make this successful for him and for his best interest. And that really wasn't anything that came into play. It was, what are the services that are being given to BioMom? How is all of this affecting BioMom? And this was her fifth child, and all four of them had prior DCS involvement, and she didn't have custody of them. So at the end of that really painful situation, I looked at my husband and said, something has to change. This is not okay. And I've always been the type of person that when you get lemons, you try and make lemonade out of it. So I said, let's change the law. And after going through the Chin statute, there were so many areas where we looked at each other and said, how can this possibly be? You know, in law school, family law 101, you were taught best interest of the child is always at play. And you had a whole statute of the government's children were best interests was never even mentioned. And that just did not sit right with us, and we thought something had to change. So we came together with some friends over a weekend at our dining room table that had been involved in legislation before and came up with like a 12 to 13 point bullet point plan and how to take it from an idea to something that would pass legislation and go into effect to help kids.
It's worth mentioning that we did invite DCS to join our conversation today. They declined. So what changes have you seen since Senate Bill 1 was implemented?
So some of the changes that we've seen in our own like current foster daughter's case is that the judge is actually taking a minute to read the report that we give her. She is allowing us to speak during our hearing, whereas previously she was not. Previously, in trying to bring up the law and the proper way that things were to be addressed, I was actually thrown out of the courtroom. So this is a real big change for us, and the fact that we're able to be heard now.
Moving up.
Yeah.
You know, and she took time to read the report and such. So that for us has been a significant change. I think also I've joked around with some of the folks at DCS because I think that there are a lot of people there that are trying to do the right thing for the right reasons, but it's a huge ship to turn. And I don't think it's being turned quick enough.
No.
But I do think that you have folks there that are there with the right heart. But the implementation is lacking. But in talking with them, I've said, it looks like you've given me like the cream of the crop FCM this time around. Like, she's fantastic sort of thing. So, I mean, we have seen changes in that way as well. I think that with our connections, like through this process, we become friends with a lot of other foster parents. Some of the foster parents that are represented by all the stories that we gained in trying to convince the legislation on why this change needed to occur. And through that, we've also been able to help them. And we've seen how this legislation is enabling them to better advocate for the foster children that they have in their care. And for us, it was huge, especially right now with the foster daughter we have. She's medically fragile. And because of that, it's even more important to me that everything is done right. And I'll tell you, when July 1st hit, she had already been with us for 6 months and was 7 months plus old, and July 1st hit. And I thought, yes, like, the law can specifically help us now if we have to advocate for her stronger, because they're not doing what's in her best interest. So we have seen changes. And I know that my husband has also been able to take on some cases from other foster parents.
Yeah.
And use this law specifically to better enable them to help the foster children in their care, their kids.
Sounds like the network of foster parents is a big one and a close-knit one with a big heart. Joe Delmater, there have also been initiatives to increase the amount of legal representation available to children within the system, and the number of court-involved cases in Indiana DCS is more than double the national average. 25 new attorneys have been implemented at DCS, and are these new hires, do you think, a sufficient solution?
No.
No?
No. No. Just no. There's so much that needs to be done. And
is there a better number? Closer number?
Well, that's not the problem.
That's not the problem.
It's a problem. But, you know, when you're trying to present solutions, it's not throw more money at it, because you're throwing more money at an entity that has already shown they're not doing what they should do with it. And it's unfortunate that this CWG report was one of many. You know, Indiana loves to study things and then not do anything. And this is just yet another example of, you know, the 57 points from the CWG report that you referenced before, that they spoon feed a list of this is how you fix it, and then we don't do hardly any of that. So, you know, we can only blame ourselves politically for not listening to the people who are educated on how to fix our broken child welfare system. And we say, well, we can't do that. You know, the lawsuit that you had mentioned earlier that is trying to require the right to counsel for kids, we were given a little bit of an alert about that before it was filed, because we were asked if we wanted to participate. And we declined because, you know, that was not how we envisioned trying to help with our solutions. But we let DCS know, hey, you guys have this come down the pipeline. If you want to stay ahead of it, avoid more bad press because you've already gotten enough. Just so you know, you might want to do something about it. The response was, well, yeah, where's the money going to come from? And it's true for any state entity. You know, it is a money game. You have to be given the money from the legislature, and your legislators have their own political interests. The governor has his own political interests and agenda. Everybody's, you know, rubbing elbows with somebody, and it's an unfortunate reality. But at the end of the day, yes, you need more attorneys. Absolutely. These poor DCS workers are completely overworked. You know, you have the case standards that are not being met with no accountability. Those people need to be helped. But at the end of the day, you have a culture problem at the DCS. When you have I, as an attorney, I at times feel like I am being bullied by certain DCS attorneys. And when I try to just bypass that and go above their heads, it's interesting the level of response that I receive, and you know what we can do about that really needs to come from less just throwing money at it and more systemic change, cultural change.
We're talking about the Indiana Department of Child Services more than a year after the Child Welfare Policy and Practice Group offered its recommendations on how to improve the agency. And we're taking your questions and comments on social media. And we especially want to hear from you if you've been involved in the foster system in the last dozen or so years, either as a parent or as a child. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. I'm Matt Pelser. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Before we get back to our guests, I want to encourage you to sign up for our topic alerts. If you find yourself near the radio at this time of day and you want to know what we're talking about, we send a small, and I mean very small, email every day that we have a show, because email fatigue is a very real thing. You can sign up for that at WFYI.org/all in. That's also where you can catch up on past shows. Again, WFYI.org/all in. Back now to our discussion on the Indiana Department of Child Services with foster parent advocates Christy Cundiff and Kayamisha Colum and Joseph Delamater. State House reporter Brandon Smith is here as well. There's a class action lawsuit open right now, which claims that children remaining in DCS care for too long remain in DCS care for too long, and they're shuffled between too many homes. Director of Indiana DCS Terry Stigdon refutes that in a 7-minute statement on YouTube. She also called for the most recent. She also called the most recent suit inflammatory, and she acknowledges that the agency is far from perfect, but that Indiana is moving in the right direction.
It is easy to cherry-pick our most challenging cases to support a narrative suggesting this is every child's experience, when in reality, the average number of homes a foster child lives in while in DCS care is 2.
Christy, 9 children are named plaintiffs in the case, and among their chief complaints are the allegation that DCS failed to meet the needs of children with disabilities in foster care, and that there is too heavy a reliance on institutionalization. Are children with special needs being adequately served?
Absolutely not. And I think in my own personal situation, I adopted 3 children who had been moved 7 times in 2 years. I have another son that was had 13 different cases open in 13 different counties. So we have saw children being moved around like furniture, and that still hasn't stopped. I get emails every day from DCS showing up and saying, we're moving this child for this particular reason. And so, again, they're failing to follow the new law that just came into effect on July 1st about the serving foster parents with notice of change of placement. And so we're having to remind them to follow their own policy that was just given to them. It's kind of like street talk between us foster parents that there's DCS policy and then there's DCS practice. And most times those two things don't go together. But, I would have to disagree with Director Stigdon, and I do think that children are being moved. They're being moved too much.
What are some of the reasons, though, that they're being moved?
I had a case brought to me yesterday that this one child was moved from a relative placement because the bio family didn't like this relative and wanted them moved to another placement. One of the things we're going to work on this next year is first right. We had the first right of choice bill that Kaya Misha drafted, and Senator Merritt kind of helped with us. And I'm going to use Senator Merritt's words. We need to, you know, do we have to pass common sense law to get DCS to do what they need to do with what is in the best interest of the child? And so one of our big pushes this year will be first right of adoption, first right of choice of adoption. We have foster parents who have had children in their homes for 3 and 4 and 5 years yet, and will say, we want to adopt this child, but then DCS comes up with this big plan that they're going to start interviewing all these other families to adopt that child, even when they could stay in the same home that they've been in for quite some time. And we've seen that happen, where that family that they've been with for 2 or 3 years wasn't picked, a new family was picked, and so then they just pick up that child and they move it to a new family, not even knowing whether that child is even going to make it in that new family or not. That's just not in the best interest of children. And I've met with DCS and we've talked to them about trauma, and DCS wants to use their trauma-informed care platform that they're trying to lessen trauma for children. But in all actuality, they create more trauma for the child.
Kaya Misha, I want you to respond to Heidi on Facebook. She says it needs to be shared that DCS is in the position of making sure that parents have the opportunity to correct what was wronged, neglect, and or abuse. DCS can get sued for not providing services to the parents. DCS has an agenda of not getting sued. This is why child best interest within the system takes a back burner. That's what Heidi says.
Okay. So one thing I'd like to bring up is the notification. That law is actually over a year old at this point. That law was Senator Houchin's that she passed in last legislative session, in terms of that if a child has been in your care for 12 months, that they need to provide you with notice of change of placement, and that that foster parent can, in fact, respond, request a hearing to discuss whether that change of placement should, in fact, take place. And yes, that we've seen that be broken time and time again over the past year. But that law is actually already over a year old and is still not being followed appropriately. In addition to Senate Bill 1, which was passed, which has even more rights for foster parents. I think that, yes, DCS, right, they don't want to get sued. However, it is my opinion as an attorney, and it's not the way that we decided to go about it. We wanted to make legislative change because I thought that could be the most impactful and that we could get it done. However, some of these other items, like attorneys for kids, some of the other items in trying to make sure that children are not moved around, trying to make sure that they receive, when they're disabled, the proper medications that they should, when they're actually truly taken out of homes that they should be taken out of because there's already prior notification regarding that. Those are the lawsuits that are presently pending in the Southern District of Indiana, one of them being done by the law firm of Kirkland and Ellis with a Better Childhood organization behind it, and then the other MOFO law firm, and Kathleen Delaney is local counsel there for the right to counsel. I think those two lawsuits are very important because those are items that have been brought up time and time again in different ways. Those are items that Christy has been pushing for a long time, other folks have been pushing for, and they've not been picked up. So if this is the only way to get it done, to get folks to pay attention, to get DCS's attention, then that's what needs to take place because lawsuits can make change. And that's what these lawsuits are after. They're not after money. They're after making change for the kids that are in the system.
I filed a lawsuit against DCS back in 2010. And I went through the ACLU. Ken Falk represented me. And we did get change made, and it was over the subsidy negotiations because that's a whole nother big issue. Our state doesn't support permanency for foster children. And when I did that lawsuit, I wanted to make change for all the children in the state of Indiana. Unfortunately, DCS only did that for a couple years, and then they went back to their old ways of not negotiating subsidy. So I see what Kaimisha is saying with the lawsuits and things like that. But I think, and like she said, I think the only way we're going to get permanent positive change is to go through our General Assembly and get it passed, and then keep pushing and pushing and pushing for accountability to make sure that they follow the law.
Brandon. Something that's been talked about, Heidi just mentioned it in the comment, Kaimisha and the others have talked about it too, is this idea, it's a philosophical difference between a lot of foster parents and the agency itself, which is this idea of reunification. For DCS, reunification is the ultimate goal. And I talked with Director Terry Stigdon a couple of weeks ago in part about why they believe that should be the ultimate goal.
If you invest more in keeping families together and getting them the resources around them so that they don't have to rely on the government when they're in need again, it's better for them and better for us, right? Our number of kids in care has dropped. And as that goes down, we should see a decrease in what we're spending there. And not just a decrease, but a shift. So instead of a shift that's strongly intervention, how can we look at more prevention services available for those families, keeping them in the home?
So I have an issue with some of that. When you see time and time again in the news, children dying or being hospitalized because they haven't been taken out of the home, when you have children that are lost and being searched, right, for weeks on end, and then you find out that there are already calls made to DCS several times and they unsubstantiated that investigation or they just decided not to look that way, that's a problem. One death is too many. These are our children. This is our future. We need to start taking better care of them. I am all for wrapping a family around in care and providing them with as much resources as possible. But when you have already instances where you know that they have abused children previously, when you know that they already have a couple of children already in care, and then they give birth to a brand new infant, how is it smart or common sense at all to say, yes, let's let that brand new helpless baby infant go home with someone that has already shown us time and time again that they cannot take care of a child because that child is already in care? That's a problem. So while some of these numbers are going down, I'd really like to see how that's affecting other children. And unfortunately, we probably won't get to know that until 2 years from now, because that's when they can release the mortality rates. But we already know what they are for 2014, 2015, and 2016. Those numbers are horrible. They're in the 60s and the 70s. We should all be really, really angry that our government lets this happen. And while I respect Terry Stigdon and I think that she has a really hard job, I think that some of the statements that say we've come this far and we're so much better, I don't think you can yet be proud of that until you can truly state there is not a child in our watch, in our care, that we have not let fall through a crack. And unfortunately, that's not the case right now. There's still a lot of work to be done.
Amy on Facebook says the children who are wards of Indiana need more DCS attorneys who are knowledgeable, not just more attorneys filling an empty desk. As foster parents, it can take time to get answers or court orders filed for medications, vaccinations, etc. Many of us are seeing we have kids lacking permanency simply because of waiting for dates to be opened up in overloaded county courts plagued by the opioid crisis. And we talked a little bit about the new attorneys. The 25 new attorneys, I understand some of them have left.
Right. Yeah. I mean, well, DCS just had a big changeover in their top four attorneys throughout the state. And then, of course, we've just had the resignation of Todd Meyer, who was our associate director, and now he's gone. So, you know, when you say that you've hired 25 new attorneys, I want to know how many attorneys have left and what the offset of that is, because we already know that five are already gone. And, you know, with what Kaimisha was saying, when I was a foster parent in 2006, these babies did not go home with families. And so one of the other big pushes that we're going to push for in this legislative session is that moms be tested. And if moms test positive for drugs, then those children don't go home from the hospital. And if there are other children, older children that's already in foster care, then that baby needs to be removed and be placed with those siblings that are already in care. And we've got the Baby Ruth Ringer story that keeps haunting this state over and over and over, where she had a two-year-old sibling already in care and literally starved to death in her baby bed for 6 weeks and died. And I actually think that there were case managers in the house that morning doing a home check, and then the baby died later that night. You know, and I've talked to the governor about this, and I've talked to him about his infant mortality rate, and he's concerned about that, and he wants to lower that. And my conversation last week with him was, Governor, look at your infants that are dying that have involvement with the Department of Child Services, and they're in foster care. That would probably lessen about half of the infants that have died in our state.
I think it's also important to note that the attorneys that are part of DCS need to be trained. Many times these are young, green attorneys. And I mean, my husband and I, we were young, green attorneys once too. It takes time. It takes mentorship. It takes training. And that's something that I don't think these attorneys are being given enough of. I know in the instances where we have our DCS attorneys for our cases, for our foster children, there was, in our very first case, I think if he maybe said more than three sentences throughout four different hearings, that I may be exaggerating. He also had to have the judge finish sentences for him because he didn't actually know how to properly finish the addressing of a court on a matter. And those are the types of things that quite honestly outrage me, because that means that our foster son at that point in time, our current foster daughter, they're not getting the best representation. And while DCS has a specific agenda that may not always align with that foster child, you need to have a proper, qualified, educated attorney that knows what to do in that courtroom, that is also not going to be bullied by the public defender. Because in many times, those public defenders, they're fantastic. They're doing exactly what they're there for. They are protecting the bio parents' rights, as they should. That's their job in the courtroom. But then DCS's job is to even out that playing field. And a lot of times we saw that not happening.
We heard earlier in the Joe, go ahead.
Well, I wanted to – you know, we touched a little bit about policy. And a few minutes ago, you played that piece from – or the clip from Director Stignan. And I just wanted to say, I think to a point that she's right, that if Indiana would implement policies to better support not just children but its citizens, you know, keep Hoosiers healthy and happy, we would have a much lower need for all these people in the child welfare system. You know, Christy just mentioned it, and I'm thankful you did, the infant mortality rates. And I'm glad that that's on the governor's short list of things he's watching, because one of the things that I've learned, if you didn't know this, the infant mortality rate is a number one indicator of the health and wellness of your citizens. And we have had a bad one for a while. And if you want to try to fix that, you know, we're not talking about pour more money at DCS. They're not going to fix the infant mortality rate. DCS is reactive. They're the ones that are showing up when they get a call that something's wrong, and that's certainly what makes part of the job so hard. We need policies that are helping lift people out of poverty, that are helping support wages so that people can be happier and healthier. You know, if we remove the stress, if we help support people out of poverty by putting dollars, whether they're federal dollars or state dollars, into effective programs, you will systematically change the shift so that we don't need to be here having this, you know, complaint fest about things that DCS should or shouldn't do. So she's right to that point, and she's not getting the support that she needs from our legislature and from our governor, because they say all these great things about wanting to help kids, but where's the action? Where's the rubber meet the road? Where's the money? Where are the votes coming from?
I wish we could do 2 hours on this.
we could certainly.
Okay, in about the 30 seconds that we have left, I mean, what are things that could be done now that aren't being done? I mean, I know that's a big question, but I mean, what is an easy thing to do now that you're surprised you haven't seen yet?
Ooh, follow the law. No. I'm serious, because it is a problem that it's already mentioned that laws from a year ago are not being followed, and laws from July 1st are not being followed. So if DCS can take the time and please make sure that all of your employees know what the law is, and that if the members of the judiciary can make sure that they know, like, hey, these are the new statutory updates, so that I don't have to file motions for contempt for failure to follow it.
I want to thank you all so much for your perspectives. Attorney and foster parent advocates Kayamisha Colum and Joseph Delamater, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
And administrator and CEO of Indiana Foster and Adoptive Parents, Christy Cundiff, thanks for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Indiana State House reporter Brandon Smith, thank you.
Thank you.
Next time on All In, we'll explore the recent controversy surrounding Indiana Virtual School and the Indiana Virtual Pathways Academy, who are accused of inflating enrollment numbers to get more taxpayer funding. We'll talk about that next Tuesday. On a personal note, my wife is 39 weeks pregnant today, so if you don't hear me next Tuesday, that's why. In the event that I'm not here to do the show, you'll be in great hands with Jill Sheridan. And thank you, Jill, for standing by while we're on Baby Watch 2019. I'm Matt Pelser. Thanks for listening. This is All In.